This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today I have with me
Lucas Dreyer.
And I am Diane McConnell. So, Lucas, we've been talking for a few weeks about clinical exercise physiologists and your work at Orokinetics.
Yep.
What have you got for us today?
Yeah, so today I'm going to talk about something that can sound a bit surprising when you first hear it. It's about exercise for cancer, or exercise as part of cancer treatment, not as a replacement of chemo or radiation or surgery, but as a proven add-on that can help people cope better, recover better, in many cases live longer. So at Orokinetics we work with two cancer charities. The one is PROSFIT, which I'm not going to say much about today, because there's a lot to say about treatment for prostate cancer and the specifics around that, so I would like to make that another session in its entirety. But the other charity that we work with is XMED for cancer. XMED stands for exercise as medicine for cancer, and it's a more comprehensive funding than the PROSFIT one. It covers patients for up to 6 months, and so it funds people before they go for start of treatment, while they're busy with treatment, and also in the recovery afterwards. So I want to talk a little bit more about that sort of program that we have with XMED. So the referrals happens through the oncology department at Mid Central, and we can receive the patients at any stage during their treatment. So it could be before they start with the treatment because there's some issues, or it can be during to help the patient cope with the treatment, or it could be afterwards to help with the recovery. So I'm going to talk a little bit about why those three different parts are all important. So I know when you're a cancer patient and you hear the idea of exercise, then your immediate response would be, oh shit, I can barely get through the day, how do you want me to exercise? And you're not alone. When you go through all of that and all the mental challenges that comes with it, I know exercise is the last thing you want to think about. I remember 30 years ago when my brother was diagnosed with cancer, and I was just starting my studies on this, and there was some evidence at that stage already that exercise is beneficial, and I mentioned it to him on the telephone. He put the telephone down in my ear. He didn't want to hear it at that stage. He just wanted to go there. But so this is very well researched. There's a lot of research that came out over the last 30 years around the benefits of and the importance of exercise for cancer. And to be clear, it's not about boot camps or pushing yourself through pain. It's about the right kind of movement, the right dose, and monitored by professionals. So it's a very careful prescription process as careful as the prescription of medicine. It's carefully monitored and it pitched at the intensities what the client can manage, and it's the type of exercises are tailored around what the patient need mm-hmm. and what would bring the best result for the patient at that particular stage where he or she sits with their cancer. And so I'll go a little bit more into that. But here's the key idea that most people are not properly informed when they start of cancer treatment, and that is that the treatment of cancer is rough, it's brutal sometimes is the right word to use, and surgery, chemotherapy and radiation triggers an inflammation response, a stress response mm-hmm. that basically increases the demand of oxygen and nutrients at the injury site, at the treatment site. So your heart, lungs and your muscles actually works harder. They go under a challenge. It's almost like a physical challenge, but this is an inflammatory challenge. The body needs to cope with that post-treatment effect on the physiology. And so if your baseline fitness is too low, your chances are you're not going to survive this. And so therefore at oncology, they often, before they do surgery or before they start with chemotherapy, they do a VO2 max test, which is a test where they put you on a treadmill and see how high can you lift your oxygen consumption, your oxygen intake during exercise. How, at what intensity can you still function? And that gives us an idea of how robust your physiology is at dealing with the oxygen demands that the treatment are going to produce. And if your fitness is too low, then there's some stuff that needs to be done, and part of that is that they if it's borderline, they send patients to us so we can help with the pre-exercise fitness level. And with those clients, it's also then very important that we continue that during the treatment process. And so because this recovery demands oxygen and demands a minimum level of cardiovascular functionality and strength, these people who are already deconditioned or older or living with other health conditions, they need to build that fitness and that strength and maintain it. So decades of exercise research have now basically provide very clear evidence that exercise is not a nice to have part of cancer treatment. It is a practical, essential tool to reduce the side effects and improve quality of life during and after treatment. And so the benefits that exercise, that these studies report across many cancers, are associated with things like more energy, less fatigue, improved strength, better balance, ability to maintain daily tasks, better mood, less anxiety, less muscle loss, improved recovery after surgery, and also lower risk of reoccurrence of cancer mm-hmm. and also lower risk of dying. So and this is there's a number of I don't want to go into all the research around it, but there's some gold standard research that's quote often around cancer rehab, and it's research that's been done on patients, the pre-treatment model before they start with their chemotherapy and their surgery, getting them fitter, what is the value of that, and that research report clearly better quality of life, better ability to handle the treatment process, and also quicker recovery afterwards. Mm-hmm. And then there's also some research that's done on the during treatment process, and that research also clearly indicate that even if you start later, you start while you're already in busy with your chemotherapy, then that already helps with the fatigue and the tiredness and the mood swings and the anxiety and energy levels, and so that movement helps with the body to cope with the chemotherapy. That helps because chemotherapy is basically poisoning. It's based on the idea that the cancer cell is a weaker cell. So if I poison the body, the weaker cells will die first. That's the whole concept behind it. So they're basically poisoning the body. And so so when you exercise, it helps the body to actually get rid of that poisons, get it out of the system quicker.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and then it helps the healthy cells to recover quicker after the chemotherapy. So it's a very important part of coping with it. Your time that you're gonna spend and nausea, and the time that you're going to spend in extreme fatigue and tiredness is going to be shorter, and so that has an immediate effect on your immediate relationships and your quality mm-hmm. of life, and your ability to just deal with this, with this thing that you're going through. So and so the important thing to understand that this prescription, and I'm going to go into that in a moment, is very precise, it's very individualized. So it's not just throwing you into the gym and getting you to do whatever you feel like doing. Like that's obvious, that's often the case with people that don't have a background in exercise. That haven't previously exercised, they would go to the gym and they wouldn't know what to do, and they see an empty machine and they jump on it and they do a few reps, and they have no concept really of sets and reps and what muscles to target and those sort of things. We're talking about professional help here that's directly targeted at your specific issue, and a little bit more about that in a moment. So the after treatment research, the long-term outcome of exercise on cancer clearly shows about a 20-40% reduction in all-cause mortality.
That's major.
It's massive. So it depends on the type of cancer and this research is, although it's observational, it's confirmed with clinical trials where you actually have a random control study with a control group.
Mm-hmm.
The consistency of the findings of those RCT studies, random control treatment studies, shows that the same sort of impact on signs and symptoms of fatigue and on fitness and on strength than the observational study, so that points in the same direction, and so we have I think sufficient evidence to the extent that some of the major recommendation frameworks in the world, like the American College of Sports Medicine and the American Association of Cancer, basically strongly recommend that people with cancer should exercise, and it should be an essential part of the treatment modality, and not something that is seen as a nice to have. So one reason why exercise is so powerful and why it has such a multiple sort of level of impact, so many things, fitness and mood and mental health and fatigue and strength and survival is the fact that the impact of the cancer treatment on things is, and the side effects that comes with cancer treatment, those sort of things seem to all be interconnected. You know, fatigue and deconditioning and low mood and pain sensitivity and loss of strength and fitness, chemical changes like serotonin levels that decrease, and impact on insulin and glucose, and it's all interrelated, it's all interconnected. It's like a vicious cycle where the one thing leads to the next thing that leads to the next thing. And the thing that exercise does, it breaks the cycle. And therefore it has a multiple level of impact. There's no medicine out there that is comparable in the multi-variable impact that we get with exercise. There's no other medicine that one pill or one treatment that you can do that will have the same impact on all the factors that exercise impact. You can't drink a pill that will actually improve your fitness and improve your muscle strength, and that'll have an impact on your insulin and your glucose response, on the food that you eat. That will have an impact on your serotonin levels and on your mood and your fatigue levels and your anxiety to the same extent that exercise. So we've got one modality here that impact various factors in your health that will require up to 4 to 5 different types of medicine.
It's powerful.
It's very, very powerful. And I think if you're going through this, it's most definitely one of the best things that you can do is to get some help with an exercise program. Mm. And it's important to emphasize that don't attempt this on your own, because you need to pitch it right. You know, it's just like a medicine prescription.
So would you work with the oncologist as part of a team, or do you base it on your knowledge and observations? Or are you coming to that?
Yes, so the referral process comes through the oncologist.
Okay.
And we're in constant communication of the oncologist. So patient that is during treatment will tell us, okay, so I'm going for treatment tomorrow. And then the next few sessions that he comes back, the oncologist will tell him, okay, you've got to wait up to this point before you go back for your exercise. And then when he comes for exercise, and we know he had his treatment yesterday or 2 days ago, we'll drop the intensity of exercise. And so we'll adjust the program for that day until the signs, the vital signs tells us, okay, the guy. So because when he comes in, what you'll see is fatigued, he's tired, the heart rate is elevated, the blood pressure might be very low more elevated. There might even be irregular heartbeats because the toxicity of the treatment. That's one of the things that's not often talked about. It is the side effect of the treatment that often cause other health issues.
Mm.
And that's one of the things that I haven't mentioned so far. One of the major reasons why you need to exercise, because we know we prescribe exercise for people with lung disease. We prescribe exercise for people with heart disease. We prescribe exercise for people with diabetes because it helps with glucose control and insulin control. And so if you go for chemotherapy, there are those side effects that can come up, and people do end up with lung issues and heart issues. Not all the time. It depends on where you sit and on what your health condition is before you enter this process. But it's really important to understand that the benefits of the exercise also include a certain level of protection against the onset of those other issues that you don't want as a long-term after effect of your cancer treatment. So the three phases of rehab: the pre-rehabilitation, the maintenance phase, and the restorative rehab focus is basically what cancer treatment consists of, and the type of exercise, the dose that's prescribed, and the sets and the reps are all catered around where you sit and what part of the treatment is. It's going to be slightly different in the different phases of the cancer treatment process. We've known for quite a long time now that there's a cutoff level in terms of fitness. So if the oncology department tests you before your cancer treatment start, and you do a VO2 max, and there's a cutoff level, if you're below a certain level, then they will tell you, oh, we don't think you, it's wise for you to go through this process. And so if you look way too low, they might sometimes not even attempt. So if you're elderly and you're frail and the impact of the treatment is just going to be too severe. But if you're borderline,
mm-hmm.
in terms of your cardiovascular fitness, then those are the type of patients that we often receive and that we then work with for the whole process. And they fund it for 6 months, up to 6 months. So it starts before the treatment. We work with them for a month or so. And then during the treatment, we maintain the exercise, and then afterwards we pick it up again. If there's surgery in between, we have, for surgeries, the impact, the metabolic cost of surgery is more extreme, and so those we try to strengthen before they go, and then they go for surgery, and then after surgery we need to wait for the healing process. But if your baseline strength and fitness are better, then you cope with that a lot better, and so you start seeing quicker recovery. And so mostly after about 6 weeks, we then pick up the exercise again work with those patients.
And that be coming in, say, twice a week when they are coming in?
Yeah, they're coming in twice a week, yes. Mm. So that prescription is individualized, as I said before. So what we do is the patient would be coming in, and we'll be doing, we'll be looking at the resting signs, vital signs, the glucose, the heart rate, the blood pressure, and so forth. We'll also ask a lot of questions around musculoskeletal issues, because and often there's stuff that the patient is not even aware of, around musculoskeletal issues. Mm. and so we often pick that up as well. Then we do a response test. We look at how the heart actually responds on exercise with an ECG. We also look at blood pressure response and perceived exertion and heart rate response. And then we use that information to design the program, to individualize the program. So we pitch it at the right level. Mm-hmm. And we also make sure that if there's musculoskeletal issues, for instance, a guy comes in and he struggles with a chronic sore shoulder. And that's related to postural changes that happened over time, a certain number, a level of stiffness in the shoulder, and we can deal with that. We can rectify. There's also the post effect of surgery on the lymphatic system. You know, this if they breast cancer, for instance, leave some lymphatic after effects, so the arms swell up and it stiffens up the shoulder, and it limits the range of motion in the shoulder. And if you don't deal with that specifically, then that shoulder can tighten up over time, mm-hmm. and become a chronic condition. But there's range of motion exercises you can do, and doing those exercises also help with the lymphatic drainage in those areas. So in closing, we're sitting with a situation that every single day about 71 people hear the words "you have cancer." Mm-hmm. That's nearly 30,000 new diagnoses a year. 30,000. And with our aging population, that number is set to jump to over 40,000 annually by the mid-2040s. So it's not just a health crisis, it's a financial one too. The public health system already spent over 800 million a year on cancer care. And that's before we count the hidden cost that families carry. You know, time off work, travel to treatment, the emotional toll. And the Maori, the burden for Maori is even heavier. They're twice as likely to get diagnosed with cancer, and they often face greater barriers to support. And so we're facing a future where our hospitals and our whānau and our economy will feel this pressure more than ever. It is, how do we help people live well through it? And this is where the funded exercise is so important, because we have a thing here, a tool here, that can actually impact multiple levels of cancer treatment after effects. Like I said, it's there's nothing else that can have the same range of impact. And so exercise isn't a side topic anymore. It's one of the most practical and evidence-based tools that we have.
Thank you, Lucas. That will have been so important for so many people to hear. This is Diane McConnell, and I've been talking to Lucas Dreyer. And next week we continue with talking about
prostate cancer.
Prostate cancer.
This is part 4 of 5. Tune in next week for part 5.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.